Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, good morning. My name is Jansen Brooks, and you're listening to the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show for Saturday, March 26, 2022. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit behind. We have two very interesting guests today from Dallas, Texas, a young entrepreneur, Rondo, and his father, Ronald. Hopefully he can be available to chime in a little bit. But Rondo is a young man, not too long ago was in the Air Force, and now he is doing some business there in Dallas and hoping to go to Atlanta for his to further his education. But before we get started, let me just talk a little bit about the Council of Elders concept. This is a concept where elders in the community will try to help young people navigate through life, answer some of their questions, and just reach out and help where we can, as well as learn from younger people. But today our guest again is Rondo Drain. He's living in Dallas, Texas right now. And Rondo, welcome to the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show. How you doing, man?
Hey, sir. I'm doing good.
That's good. Well, Rondo, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Okay. So let me start with, so I graduated high school from Kansas City, Missouri in Raytown in 2016. And then I went ahead and signed up for the Air Force December 2016, and I served for 6 years. I was stationed at Offutt Air Force Base. Security Forces was my job title, and with to do a lot of traveling. I also went to school at University of Nebraska of Omaha, and while I was out there, I pledged Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. I crossed Fall 20. Soon as Corona happened, that's kind of when I crossed over and just got out the military just this past December and been in Texas since New Year's. So that's me in a nutshell.
Oh, okay. So you a Q, huh? Q dog.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, I tell you what, congratulations. I got a lot of family members with Qs. Rondo, they were so tough when I was going to school. I was scared to join, man. But anyway, it's a great organization. And so you did some security forces. What was your job consist of? You were guarding officers and so forth, or
So what I did for the most part is through my basic training in 2017, I went and basically went for an extra amount of training to do a flying position. I flew on an aircraft, the E-4 Bravo, and basically flew around with the Joint Chief of Staff, and wherever they went, I went. My job was to guard the aircraft. So that's where I got to do a lot of my traveling. And then other than that, if I wasn't with that type of detail, I would be doing was basic law enforcement within the military jurisdiction. So from securing bases or certain type of assets, my job was just I was the first and last person if it was a bad day. I was the first on the scene and the last on the scene. So I did that. I was also in leadership positions. I was a part of three different, committees that were for the morale of younger troops and giving us something to do when we weren't in training or we weren't at work. Just making sure that when we got off of work, we had something to do. And so that was something that I took part in, throwing block parties for the entire base where over 3,000 people are showing up, and it was just a good time. So I was over those type of committees that held those type of events. So when it came to, like, public relations and being in the media, making flyers or making digital graphics for Snapchat filters or for Facebook posts, I was just kind of the person that did that. And so also in the military, I was the military artist. So I did all the T-shirts. I did a few murals. I did a lot of patches and a lot of sketches of a lot of things that different squadrons wanted because they have patches that they wear on their left and right shoulders. So they need somebody to draft up the idea. So I did a lot of that also.
Oh, okay. So you made yourself very useful then while you was in the Air Force.
Most definitely.
Now, was you interested in art before you got to the Air Force?
Yes. All of high school, I was kind of like the leading person in my my school district. I was on the yearbook team, and we won state awards for our yearbook pages that I designed. I had designed the next district planner, and I won out of all of the high school students, basically what they turned in for their project, and I won that. And so that next following year, everybody had a copy of my artwork on the cover of their planner. I've always known I was into art. When I was in the military at University of Nebraska, my degree is studio art with a concentration in 2D animation. So every day my homework assignment was drawing. And to me, drawing is easy, so it never really felt like I was doing a lot of homework.
Oh, okay. Now, I understand that you will soon be going over to Atlanta. What's the name of the school that you'll be going to?
The art school is called SCAD University, Savannah College of Art and Design.
Oh, okay. And what will you be majoring? How long is that program?
So, honestly, it's my dream school. This is the number one art school in the country currently. So when I get there, I've been thinking about changing my degree. I'm not so sure yet, but when you kind of go from a regular university going to the number one art school in the country, you have more options available to you. And the people that are teaching you are people in the real world. So people that work for DreamWorks, Pixar, Louis Vuitton, these are people that work those industries, come back to this school and teach. So when I get there, kind of want to see if the sky is really the limit. I've been leaning on changing my art degree to dramatic writing. I feel like I kind of have the animation and drawing aspect down. I wouldn't mind being a person that's kind of like a Spike Lee of cartoons, if that makes sense.
Right.
So,
right. Tell me the name of that school again.
Sky University, Savannah College of Art and Design. Yeah.
Savannah College of Art and Design?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Savannah College of Art and Design. I have to look that one up. You said the number one the number one art school
number
in the
one.
Country.
Yes, sir. Since they've been number one since 2018.
Oh, okay. Okay. So now, right now, you do some entrepreneurial work. You do artwork there in Dallas, and you do websites. And what all do you do right now to make money?
Okay, so for majority part, when it came to the entrepreneurship, I had started my own brand that's called Euro. And since 2017, I've been running my own business. And at first it was a clothing company, but the word Euro had so much more of a meaning and more of a passionate direction that I wanted to go with it. So I kind of left the clothing line as more of an accessory line for the brand. And when it comes to public speaking or photography, videography, if you need flyers, logos, what else can I do? I kind of grew up a jack of all trades. So the amount of things that I know how to do are just off of experience of people needing something. And I've always been available to do the research, figure it out, and then perform. 7-8 years has been just investing in art and the newest technology and what's different, what's getting ready to change within the next 5 years. Looking at NFTs and trying to figure out what is the next wave for NFTs for the end of this year. So that's kind of what I put most of my research into. Just because art and finances, they tie together. And you got to be very well-versed and well-experienced, because the art is very much just the person themselves. You're putting the price on the art because of the person that did it. So everything. I've been able to do everything. I never really said no. I use people's questions to better steer how I should research learning better craft. So when people say, hey, I need some business cards, I already knew I had basic animation and graphic design skills when I was in high school. So by the time I was 19, I was the business card guy. And then when I was 20, I was the party flyer guy. And then when I was 21, I was the website guy. Then I was 22, he does everything guy. Now I'm 23, and we're on the phone talking. So it's every year I've been adding more, I've been doing more, and people ask for more. So it's a good tempo.
Right. In case you're wondering, folks, we're talking to Rondo out of Dallas, Texas today. He's a young artist, young entrepreneur, getting ready to go to Atlanta to further his art career. If you have a question or comment for Rondo, just press the number 1 on your phone, and you can ask a question or make a comment. But Rondo, you mentioned NFTs. What do you mean by that, NFT?
So with NFTs, basically people are buying artwork that is worth cryptocurrency. And it's the digital way of, if I had a painting that was $5,000, if I sold that in cryptocurrency, that $5,000 may be, let's just say $5,000 in crypto, is just the digital way of selling art. So it's not physical. If I took a picture of, let's say I did a painting and I painted Denzel Washington, and I had my cell phone and I took a picture on this first original picture. This is the first original picture in this painting's history. This painting is digital. It is going for sale. Somebody can purchase that by me turning it into an NFT. the same way you would go to an auction and buy a painting. It's the same thing, just digital.
Wow. So you do a painting digitally. Do you do the painting by hand at first and then digitize it, or how does that work?
I could do either. I could sit here and do a painting in 3 hours, and I could be done, and I could take a picture of it. There's so many ways how you can get physical artwork on a computer. And I also can do the artwork on the computer. I have certain softwares to where I could paint that same image on my tablet. And it's just as complicated because it's digital versus physical, where you could physically smudge or physically erase. You know, digital, you gotta kind of know how to get around to do the basic things. So,
okay. So people are buying digital artwork. So what if they want to hang it on their wall, you know, in their living room? What about that?
That's the cool part to me as an artist. If someone was to purchase any of my NFTs in my favor, or just the person that I am, I would equate the physical copy in that purchase to where it can be on your wall and you have it in your bank, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, this NFT, it's a brand new concept for me. So
right.
Are there like
Say again?
Yeah, go ahead, Rondo.
I was gonna say, if you go on Google and type in NFT, it's a non-fungible token, so it's kind of like the new currency that they're going in. Or a digital currency. So it's just the digital way of how to buy art pieces, especially high-end art pieces from your phone. It's just kind of just the digital. You don't have to go to an auction anymore. It's just on your phone. You just have to kind of pick and choose what you like.
Okay. Rondo, I see we have someone on the line right now. It has a question or comment. Caller in the 770. You have a question or comment? Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, my name is Malcolm Hughes. I'm currently in the ATL, so welcome to the ATL, Rondo. I'm interested in this NFT thing. How would a person get started? I'm not an artist or anything, but if I wanted to get started trading art or creating pieces, how would I go about marketing that? Who would be interested in it? How do I even set up an NFT? What's the cost?
Right.
Kind of. I need NFT 101.
Okay. Well, this is what I could tell you because it's so new. Nobody knows it. That's kind of why it's such a question to everybody. But basically, the way how to get started is you have to first own some type of cryptocurrency in your wallet. So if you have – and cryptocurrency is kind of expensive. So that's kind of where if you have the money to deal with NFTs, it's something you want to know about. So let's just say, for example,
let's say I got $1,000 in Bitcoin. How does that help my NFT?
Okay, so let's say you have $1,000 in Bitcoin. What you would basically do, I could sell an NFT for 50 Bitcoin, and you could purchase it. But that's kind of where it has its value, or you purchase an NFT that was worth more because you have more. And you could sell it for more. It's just it's like a monopoly. It just keeps going around the board.
Let's say I have a painting here on my wall. I got a Jacob Lawrence, and I want to do an NFT. I want to do an NFT on it. How would I go about marketing it? How would I go about advertising it? How would I find a market for it? I guess.
Right. So the market would really just come in the people that's the platform, kind of like how I was saying. The NFT worth is based off the person that does it. Kanye West could take a picture of something, a smiley face on a picture, he could post it and sell it for a certain price. Some fan of Kanye's is going to purchase it. Now they have it, and they're the first to have it. Now they could resell it. So it's kind of hard for people. The platform isn't there already, so that's kind of where you got to get with strategic teams and people that deal with ads and marketing, because from an artist standpoint, the advertisement is really where your money is really going into versus trying to invest all your money into crypto. You got to also have money to advertise and pump out your algorithm to get it bought info.
About how much would it cost me to sell a painting? Yes, we'll go with a Kanye West creation. What would it cost that? Me as an individual, not Kanye, me as an individual to try to advertise that and get it on the market.
As an artist, my advice would say never sell yourself short and put what you think the value should be in it. If you go on, looking for an NFT is kind of like shopping for clothes, but it's like shopping for art. And you can only shop for art / clothes in the sizes that you wear. So how you would sell is how you would necessarily buy an NFT. So you kind of fall into a bracket. So people that can afford your NFT, those are the people that's looking for what you have. You have to kind of find that group to where, let's say, I wouldn't know what a good crypto number is because I don't know how much crypto the average person has nowadays because it's so new. I would just say, let's say 500 crypto. 500 crypto might equal in dollars maybe $125,000, but it's 50,000 crypto. So it's the numbers. They fluctuate. So just how stocks change, the price could change. That's kind of what I was saying. You have to dig into the research because the easiest part to get started is transfer my actual currency into cryptocurrency. If I have a piece of artwork, all I have to do is go to a certain platform or app, upload it, and tie my account money. You basically have to pay for your own artwork. So if you can afford it, that's what you price your tag as. So you sell it as what you can afford. That's kind of what I was saying by that. And if a person buys it, that money goes to you. But you can either keep it as cryptocurrency or you can pull it out actual monetized value physically. But it's so new. I want to say it's probably been around for the past year and a half, 2 years, and every 3 months, a little bit of information comes out. It is a controlled knowledge type of thing because the type of verbiage is verbiage that we don't understand just yet. So within time, we're seeing trial and error. More athletes are buying and selling NFTs. Those are the people that you kind of watch because they can afford to make mistakes. So as you're watching how they move, it kind of tells you how you should move just because it's so new. And they would be the first to kind of get all the knowledge before a person like I would who's just trying to read it and do his own self-knowledge and work with the products that I have versus people that have tens and thousands of millions of dollars that can buy 100 NFTs in a second. I wouldn't know how to explain NFTs to a person like that. I would just tell them, let's just keep making art. I'll make the art, and you put the money value behind the art. Kind of where it can tag team is, if you know an artist, he can draw the art for you, and you can sell the NFT. You don't have to be the artist. And so that's kind of where my business, Yero, is kind of like a creative company, to where we get these ideas of people. And let's say you say, hey, I got this painting in my room. How can I turn this into an NFT? That's where I would say, well, let's make it digital. Let's set it up. Let's put your crypto money here behind this NFT and sell it. And when someone buys it, it just comes right back to you.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for the crypto.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Malcolm.
I mean in NFT. I said, thanks for the lesson in NFTs. One final comment. I saw where Snoop Dogg bought Desmo Records, and he's making it a NFT record company or something. Anyway, I don't understand it enough.
Anything can be an NFT. They can turn their old album covers into an NFT because Snoop Dogg as a person has value. So if he went to his first album cover and said, this is the original first copy, he could sell that for however much he felt like he deserved to have. Somebody that had that kind of money would buy that from him. Not just because they wanted the money value, but they could take something that no one else will ever have. That's kind of where it gets tricky because you could sell it like a regular market, and you could not win because you're being outbeat by more relevant competitors because the algorithm, who pumps them out, they can afford the advertising to shadow you. So that's kind of where it's the internet is a very pick and grab, changes every day.
Again, thanks for the conversation, my man.
Most definitely, sir.
Yeah, Rondo, you're talking to somewhat some old fogies here that need folks like you to turn us on to some of the new technology.
Most definitely. And I actually plan to put some PowerPoints together and do some public speaking events to the older community on some of these younger things, and even things that are younger than what I have going on. This would be something that I would tell my 15-year-old brother, hey, while you're in high school, soak up that NFT knowledge. That's how I would do it, because the verbiage is so young, it's so different. He would catch on before I caught on. So it's just that new.
Right. So if I have a painting right now, I don't have a painting right now, but let's say I did, that it was handed down to me by my grandfather, who purchased it, 50 years ago. So is that something that I could turn into an NFT and sell?
It's a way to do everything, especially when it comes to NFT. If it was a picture of you, it's really the worth. However much the sale is going for, that is what the worth is assumed to be for. But that's kind of where, as an artist, that's if everyone that's listening to the show today, if I drew something, I would ask everyone, so who likes this? And they would say, I kind of like that. And then if it was an NFT, I would, let's say if it was priced at 100, I could say, well, for the first bidder, it goes for 100. And then the next person would say, well, for the second bid, we can go for 2. And it could go just like that. It's just a digital auction. That's all it is. You just need the audience to sell to. So you got to ask yourself, who's going to pay this much money for my NFT? Why should they pay for it? What is it about me to where that's where if you have the marketing, people are going to see it and not know who you are, but you pay for it to be in their face. It's kind of like the grocery store. Fruit of the Loom has to pay for advertising, stocking, how they want the customer to see their product, because they have to compete against everybody else in Walmart. So it's the same way with NFTs, but you're the entity that people are paying for.
Okay. Well, listen, kind of in the same vein, I saw a TV commercial the other day where they were selling digital land, digital real estate. Do you know anything about that, Rondo?
No, that sounds scary. Digital real estate. I have to look that up.
Digital. Yeah. So yeah, that's a little bit beyond me too. I was wondering how that worked, but actually, it's some type of thing going on now. It's fairly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
First I heard it was maybe a couple of weeks ago. So you do all kinds of artwork, flyers, business cards.
Photography, videography. I've done weddings, prom, professional headshots, family photos. I try to adapt to the people's needs that are around me. So if I'm around a lot of families, if I'm around a lot of couples, most of those people say, hey, I know you got photography skills. Can we do this? And I've just always been the person that people ask, hey, could you do this? And I never said no to opportunity. So over the span of seven, eight years, it's crazy adding more years to this. It's a new year now, so I got to change the number. It's just every day is a new day. Every art project is something that I've probably not done just like this in the past. But every time I do something new, it's just more knowledge. And just, I like a difficult task.
So you say you do public speaking as well.
Yes, sir.
What kind of things are you doing?
So what I was doing, now that I'm out the military, and most of my public speaking was in the military, to where I was the public relations for the committees that I was in. So from DJing parties or being the MC to host parties, if there's a retirement ceremony, I am the guy at the podium speaking. Going to after school programs for young men in the community in Omaha. There's a foundation called North Star. Going there and speaking to the young men and really just giving them a young figure to see that looks like them, talks like them, but is doing something that they are soon getting ready to do. And just allowing them to ask as many questions as possible. And if I don't know the answer, my job is of someone else that I think may help me answer it or find the answer for me. So I like actually talking to younger crowds only because I'm the oldest of seven brothers, no sisters. So when it comes to just different personalities and different type of children and what they like to hear, how they like to dress and their attitudes or their aspirations or the lack of aspirations, I got six brothers that I have to keep that fire behind them. And so when I get in crowds of children their age from the ages of 5 to 20, that's the sweet spot for me just to kind of let them know, like, hey, I'm just like you. But I probably got four years of advice. I'm probably not the older guy that can give you wisdom that's going to last forever, but I can tell you something that's going to make sense today. So kind of been my realm when it comes to public speaking.
Oh, okay. Now, you're in Dallas, Texas right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's the vibe like in Dallas? I know you haven't been there very long, but how do you like it over there?
It's actually good. Today is probably the hottest day since I've been here in New Year's. It's supposed to be 85 degrees today. So other than the highways, that'll probably be my only complaint. It's a lot of fast cars here, and it's a lot of old cars here. So they both are either breaking down on the highway or an accident happened, somebody clipped somebody. So on the highways here, you really do have to be vigilant. Do not be sleepy on these highways because this is not it's a fast-paced city. It's very big. I love the views. I love the sunset. There's a lot of culture here, a lot of different type of people everywhere. What else? Really, the people here, everybody is about networking, so you have to keep at least 10 business cards on you a day. It's been times where I've handed out 6 business cards in 30 seconds just because I ran across a group of people and I wanted everybody to get my network. And I went the rest of the day with less than 10 business cards. And that's kind of, you kind of have to have 50 on you at all times, because if you're looking for business here, you can find it here. You just have to get outside, apply yourself, ask questions, and really just, my goal here until I leave to Atlanta is just to build good relationships. And I feel like that would do me good while I'm here in Dallas. I've done a lot of networking. I've already built one person's website that I met out here. He has an insurance company, and he needed some help updating his website. So I did some digital designs for him, helped him with his marketing, helped him with his social media platform to reach a younger audience, or to reach more of an audience. Social media side of his business was lacking. So just setting up plans for him and creating ads or creating flyers, creating updated business cards, just rebranding his brand. And that is what I do best. And I've already done that just off of a conversation with a person. My goal is to do a few murals while I'm out here. It's a lot of buildings, it's a lot of tourists, people taking pictures, and I need to figure out a way how to get some of my art on the wall. I have a frat brother that's out here that's going to open up some type of bar. I can't remember if it is a cigar and wine bar, and I had contacted him and let him know that I'm into painting and I do murals. So if he needed me to come inside of his bar and do some painting, if it's just retouching or adding a piece of artwork in his bar, I could do that for him. So just trying to do more things like that in an art realm.
I see. Yeah, that's interesting. Dallas seems to be a very business climate. You say people network and there's money to be had in Dallas.
Mm-hmm. You can figure out where to fit in. And as a person like me that I do a lot with cameras and editing and flyers and really just the minute things that everybody needs, I kind of see opportunity everywhere. So really just being humble with my time and just making sure that six hours out of the day I'm doing some type of research.
So when will you be going over to Atlanta?
I'll be going as soon as the fall semester starts.
Oh, okay. And what is that, a two-year or what is that?
I'll be there for 2 years. I'm currently a junior, just finished my sophomore year. So I'll be going into my junior year in the college, and I'll be transferring to that school in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Have you had a chance to visit yet?
Not the college. I'm actually supposed to go on a tour next month. I'll be driving there with my dad, and we're going to go take a look at it. And I've kind of already talked to a few people at the school that came to Nebraska to come see me. But I kind of want to just go on a campus and walk on it for myself. It's my dream school, so this is kind of like a must for me. I have to go. The fact that it's in my path to conquer, I have to take on that challenge and see what kind of person do I become at the end of this. So that's just something the anxiety is just building.
Yeah, did you get a scholarship, or are you paying for it on your own, or just how you finance it?
So with the military, just using my GI Bill, and that's why I served in the military. Did I say I was in the Air Force? I did say I was in the Air Force. So using my GI Bill to get myself through school, and it's half of school, so I should have some of my GI Bill left afterwards. Even if I don't, I'm not hurt. All I wanted to do was go to the military, get the financial backing to go to school. Now I'm done with the military, and school is right around the corner. So just now getting started in my eyes.
Right, right, right. So you're excited about the fact that the people that's at the school are actually they've done the work. It's not just theory.
Yes, this is not a place where you're being taught by a teacher that I talked to the college advisor that helped me enroll. I believe she said she worked for Louis Vuitton and another store in the span of 14 years and retired by 34. And I said, what did you do? She said, well, I was fashion marketing. So she would go to the Louis Vuitton stores and tell the people how to sell the Louis Vuitton better. And the better the company did, the better she did. And she retired in 10, 14 years. And I just looked at her like, and you work at this college? She said, yeah, this college is that good. I said, after my career, I had to come back. And so just to know that there's people that have done it, been there, are doing it, they want to come back and build people to replace the position that they were in. So that's more what I'm excited for. And like I said, I want to be the Spike Lee of cartoons. That's my goal.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, Rondo, I'm very optimistic that you'll do very well. You seem like a man that got his head screwed on right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I need all the
hair
I can get.
Wait, was your dad still there?
My dad's across the room. I could go grab him if you need me to.
Yo, go grab him. I want to talk to him for a minute.
All right, bet that. I got you.
Yes, Rondo's dad grew up in Greenville, Mississippi. Went to Mississippi Valley State. he knows some of my home area, so very personable guy. So y'all excuse me for holding up for a minute, but
he's here, right here.
Okay.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ronald.
Hey, Ronald, how you doing, man?
Doing fine, sir.
Yeah, so now I understand you grew up in Greenville, Mississippi, or did you?
Yes, I grew up in Greenville, Mississippi as a young man. Used to travel for the summertime to Chicago, the west side. So I knew a little bit about both sides of my family from the Chicago west side area and the Mississippi Delta. So, and when I graduated from high school, I went to high school in Indianapolis, Indiana, Thomas Carr House, to play football my senior year. And I came back to Mississippi to run track and play football at Mississippi Valley State. So I did a couple years at Valley and ended up getting me a job in Dallas, Texas. And my life ain't been the same since.
a country boy from Mississippi living in Dallas, Texas.
Yes, sir.
Already visited up north. So it wasn't a culture shock for you?
When I first went to Chicago, my dad moved to Chicago. My dad was living in Chicago. So I was old enough. I was 12 years old. It was time to learn how to be a man. So that's how I got to Chicago. When I first went there, it blew my mind. I did not know people was living like that. Coming from Mississippi, I thought that we was at the bottom of the bottom. I'm like, ain't no way we supposed to be living like this here. I went to Chicago, and I said to myself, ain't no way people supposed to be living like this here. It changed my whole perspective on reality real quick and fast in a hurry.
Okay, so describe what you mean when you say that, you know, living like this in Chicago.
Well, coming from Mississippi, my mom was a school teacher, and my grandmother was a school teacher, my grandfather was one, my auntie Nim was a librarian. So I came from a well-educated family, but we weren't rich. So I knew educationally the no's and don'ts. And I also felt like, you know what I'm saying, where's the wealth? Why are we not integrating ourselves in what we see on a daily basis. So I grew up around catfish and cotton all my life. And we want to invest in our surroundings. And when I went to Chicago, it brought me to a state that everybody was the enemy, your neighbor, your cousin. Like, it was more cutthroat, where to Mississippi was, it was more like the value system of self was totally different. It was more team-oriented. It was more like unity. You had to really look out for each other to a certain extent, and you took it for granted until you go to somewhere like in Chicago on the west side where everybody's killing each other, and you really got to be quick on your feet. You got to have some kind of cutthroat mentality just to survive to go to the store. You know what I'm saying? You have to learn how to walk in twos. So in Mississippi, the police was what we feared. In Chicago, you had to fear the police and each other. So it put you in a it was something to where you such a prey, Chicago. You actually have to outthink the predator, and everything was a predator. Everything.
Oh, man.
So even when somebody nice to you, you know sooner or later they setting you up for something. The difference in Chicago was, I'm going to go ahead and say it real nice and simple. Chicago was a place where they give you everything that you need to destroy yourself. And you got to be real quick on your feet. If you get anything, ain't nothing free. So if someone gives you something, it's to destroy yourself. Their friendships, their handshake, something to eat, it's something. So you always got to be on P's and Q's. So that's why I understand guys from the city and guys from the rural areas. It's two total different predators that they're looking at. And they don't know that, you know what I'm saying, they need to work together. Because no matter what your environment is, you still to pray.
Right. Ronald, I have a caller that wants to get on the line here. Caller in the 314. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Can you hear me, Dan?
Yes, sir. I can hear you.
Yeah, you know, I was going to comment on the father's description of the difference between Mississippi and Chicago, and he's absolutely right. It's pretty much like what he described, but some could be added on to. And that city, as we talk presently, is very, very violent. You know, I've been keeping track of shootings in that city, and Jensen, you know, I talk about that from time to time, but in less than a year, there's been over 3,800 blacks shot by other blacks in Chicago in less than a year's time, with over 570 some odd murders. So that's not a good place to raise kids, but although some people are stuck in it or they choose to stay in it. And I appreciate what the young man is doing with introducing the new technology that accompanying the cryptocurrency phase. It expands not only with NFTs, but it goes on with the investments and so on and everything else. So, you know, keep up the good work, both of you. I can tell that you learned a lot from your dad. And father, you keep up the good work too and hang in there.
Yes, sir. Don't make me cry on the radio.
Right now you're in Dallas, Texas, and obviously you must like it. So I take it Dallas is not quite as violent as Chicago.
No. Not at all. So Chicago is a whole other breed of its own. It's just the fact that, you know, coming from Mississippi, living in Chicago, back and forth, ex-military, myself, and then, you know, familiar to the society that I'm in, and I know where I stand. Dallas gives me a little bit of both. At the same time, I can go home and disappear.
Well, I was in Dallas about 5 years ago for a meeting, and I thought I was going to get a chance to see the city, but landed in the airport. There was a big hotel right there on the airport. Went there, stayed overnight. We had the meeting, and didn't even get out of the airport. I said, darn, I come from California to Texas and didn't even get on the freeway here. Nothing. Everything was in the airport. That is a huge airport.
Everything. The airplane.
So, yes, what type of work do you do, Colonel?
You talking to me?
Say again?
Yes, sir. What do you do for a living?
Oh, yes. Right now, I work for a company. I'm in the sales department. What we do is we help agencies that have agents that have government license keep their license and to get their government license, like in real estate, insurance, financial advisors, accountants, tax agents, et cetera. So what we do is I talk on the line with like someone like State Farm, Elk Jones, Hub, and basically I set up material to help their agents get their license and keep their license with the homework that they need. So it's called, you know, continuing education.
You know, come to think about it, I remember talking to you. I'm an insurance agent myself, and I remember talking to you, I don't know, probably about a year or so ago. I was trying to update my continuing education. Now I remember we had a conversation. You probably don't remember.
Okay. Yes, sir. So me being the only brother at that time, everybody, they don't get me mixed up. So they be like, I called a year ago and I talked to a brother. Is he still there? And I'm the only one. So they used to transfer the calls right back to me, like someone that talked to you. But I have my son working up there now. He loves it. So he get those calls transferred to him now. He's the only brother now.
Yeah, I remember we had a conversation after I had made my purchase, and you was telling me you were from Mississippi, and I'm from Alabama, and we knew some of the same towns and everything. You know, I think you're doing a good job with Rondo, man. The kid seemed like he really got his head screwed on straight, and, you know, it's on the straight and narrow. So I had to congratulate you for that.
Yes, sir. And I appreciate that. And I don't really take credit for it because I only gave him the information that my people in Mississippi gave me when I turned 16. My mom said, being a single parent, she said, I taught you everything I know. I'm a woman. So you can take my information with a grain of salt because it came from feelings. You're a man. You have to learn see stuff from the natural aspect of things so you can make better decisions for your family as a whole once you get one. And she said, for me saying it, I have to explain to you, every time you see any man that's older than you, no matter he's white, black, Mexican, fat, skinny, rich, or poor, you ask that man 1,000 questions till he tell you to shut the hell up. And she said, the reason why I'm telling you that, because that's the only way you'll learn how to be a man. And she said, the best advice you would ever get from anybody is from an idiot, because that's something you know not to do, son. So I teach that to my boy.
That's some good advice, Ronald, for anybody, you know. I'm glad you shared that with us.
Yeah, no, it takes a village to raise the kids. So I can't take credit for it because he does exactly what I taught him. So
right,
he can
get more advice
what he's trying to do tomorrow from you than he can from the man that he see on a daily basis, because his job is to ask you 1,000 questions until you tell him to shut the So that's the only way you'll learn how to eat.
Right. Now, you played football in high school. Did you play for Mississippi Valley State as well?
Well, I was on the team for the first year. I decided to quit because of the mosquitoes, and I just ran track from then on. The bug, them, I ain't never seen none of that. They were too big, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Besides playing football, they be hitting you too. Playing football, you be getting hit.
Yeah, and me, my mom said she was glad that I finally finished playing football, and I asked her why. And she said, you was the littlest dude on the field, and you kept your hand up asking for the ball. She would say, oh, I wish he just put his hand down. He too little. She said, the coach kept putting you back out there. You keep waving your hand up, showing people where the ball going. Put your hand down. My mom was a carrot. She said, I was so glad you quit football. I didn't know what to do. Because them big boys going to kill my baby.
Ah, man. Yeah, so the HBCUs getting a lot of publicity now because Deion Sanders at Jackson State and everything. There's a lot more eyes on Valley and Jackson State and, you know, those schools.
It's about time.
Have you been?
Because I've been keeping up with it.
Yeah,
I've been keeping up with it and everything. But it's about time that we went back home. You know, our people from California to New York to Miami to Houston, we got to understand they would not allow us to own our own Walmart to sell the product. We have to decide to go back on the farms and farm the product and then charge them what we want to charge them. We got to do that in every economical situation that we in, as in football. They won't let us be the head coaches. They won't let us own any teams. So once you find out the philosophy, you play like 3 years of big time, you go back to the hood, become that head coach, and you become the farmer of the next group, and you train them and educate them to how not to do what you did, how not to do the, and give back and come back and buy up your neighborhood. So it's time for us to go back to be farmers in every economical thing that's out there for us, and it's capitalism. They don't want us to own the store to sell the product, but we can be the ones in charge of the farming. So we got to have that mentality now to become the planners of everything that we do. If it's an insurance company, if it's real estate, if it's entertainment, if it's football, it doesn't matter what it is. We have to be the planners of everything. We got to go back to the basics and take control of the basics. So they have to come to us even to get the crops. You know,
right?
Goes in our neighborhood. Everybody goes in our neighborhood and take our best 10%, except us. We the problem.
Right.
We don't get on our feet and go back and go get the 10% out the project. Everybody go in our projects and our ghettos and recruit our 10%, take our 10% from us, and we never see them again.
Right. We got about 30 seconds. Gentlemen, we got about 30 seconds to go before it's a wrap. But I want to thank both of y'all for coming on today, Rondo and Ronald, and especially you, Rondo, for coming on for such short notice. And we'll have to invite you back again, okay? Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm.